Welcome to the fourth episode of the Kill Rock Podcast. Today's guest, we have Evan Lucy, the host of the Voice in First Podcast. This first song is by the band Hearts Like Lions, and it's called I'm Not Running Away From This. To the Kill Rock Podcast. This is episode 4. Who would have thought we would have lasted 4 episodes? I didn't. And last week, we hit astronomical numbers, at least for, I would think, a podcast with 3 episodes with American Arson. We hit number 15 on the rock charts, and we hit over the 1,000 mark overall. That's huge. And we want to thank you guys. The original goal was just to do 6 episodes. So maybe now we'll do 12. I think 12 is a good number. This week, we have Evan Lucy. He is the host of the Voice in Verse podcast, where he goes in depth with songwriters that include Aaron Gillespie, Chris Caraba, Matt Carter from Emery. You know, I could say these names and you would know what bands they're in. He's also the writer of the cover story for AP Magazine about 5 Seconds of Summer. And we don't get into a debate, but we do talk about the debate about the band and the scrutiny that, you know, they get from these experienced industry bands that have been around for a really long time. Now, I won't go as far as to saying I'm a huge fan of 5 Seconds of Summer, but I do like some of their stuff. you know, they have, there's heart in their music, and you might not hear it in, you know, that song, She's So Perfect, or She Looks So Perfect. But if you go on and listen to the rest of the album, it's not bad. It's not bad at all. It's, you know, some of the songs are actually really good and they're really catchy. You know, they're co-written by Alex Gaskarth from All Time Low. They're also, you know, co-written by Benji Madden from Good Charlotte. And some other, you know, writers, a lot of them, you know, a lot of you would know, a lot of you may not know. But I think the debate is, can they save rock and roll? Not can they save the pop punk genre, or can they save the punk genre? Can they specifically save rock and roll? Rock and roll isn't what it used to be. The bands that are considered rock and roll nowadays, they're not rock and roll. Imagine Dragons, they have rock elements, but they're not a rock and roll band. They're not. You know, even One Republic, I don't know how many people consider them a rock band nowadays, but, you know, they still have that image, but they're not a rock band. They're a pop band that have rock elements in them. I had a teacher at Musicians Institute, that's easy for me to say, go out and say that country is the new rock and roll. I don't know how much I agree with that, but the fact that country has rock elements in it, and they're starting to get, it's starting to get a little more rock sounding and a little less twang. You know, I guess you could agree to a certain extent, but it's not rock and roll. It's not. Is 5 Seconds of Summer rock and roll? I don't know. But from what they claim, they want to stay true to their themselves and to their roots. And their roots were with bands like Green Day and All Time Low. And we get into the interview with Evan, and he talks about how Michael, the guitar player, Michael Clifford, how his influences are bands like Sleeping with Sirens, which I'm not a fan of Sleeping with Sirens. But you know what? They're a lot more rock than Imagine Dragons. You know, they're still seen, quote unquote, in these kids. And here I am calling them kids. Well, they're 18 years old, so they are kids. I think a lot of people are jealous of their, you know, fame and the prosperity that, you know, they're enjoying right now, because they didn't have to sleep on floors or tour in vans or eat ramen, as Evan so put it in his interview. You know, you need to realize that what we used to know is gone. You know, the music that I listened to as a kid, the bands that I liked, not all of them are around anymore. And no band is going to replicate that sound. There's no band that's going to redo Their Only Chasing Safety. There's no band that's going to redo The Artist in the Ambulance. There's no band that's going to be the receiving end of Sirens. No. You know, not even those bands. If Thrice were to ever get back together, if Under Oath were to get back together, if the receiving end of Sirens were to get back together, even Thursday, even they will tell you, we can't replicate that sound, because that sound was who we were then. It's not who we are now. And that's where we are as a rock genre. That's where we are. What we knew then isn't what it is now. We are old wineskins, as the Bible puts it. And I'm not necessarily sticking up for 5 Seconds of Summer. I have my own viewpoints, but if they're the band that's going to push us to the future of the genre as well as the music industry, then so be it. We all got to jump on that bandwagon and go with it. We already have metal bands that reach out to the same exact demographic, and no one bashes an eye to it. If you go to Warped Tour, it's the same as going to a 5 Seconds of Summer show. An overabundance of 15-year-old girls. They're just wearing different t-shirts. They just want to listen to something their mom and dad don't listen to. That's how I found bands like, you know, the bands that I listened to, the bands that I grew up on. was I didn't want to listen to country music like my mom does. And nothing wrong with country music, and there's nothing wrong with my mom. It's just I didn't want to listen to that. I wanted to listen to rock and roll. And I started out with bands like Dead Poetic and Demon Hunter, and, you know, that soon turned into Under Oath, that soon turned into Thrice. And I talk about those two bands because I believe those two bands have influenced myself in regards to the music industry, as well as being a songwriter, more than any other band. Have I tried to redo an Under Oath and Thrice song? Yeah. I try to write a new Thrice song. I try to write a new catchy melody that was Thrice-ish, one that would be inspired by Dustin Kensrew himself. But it never happened. It never happened. I'm Keith Settles. I write what Keith Settles writes. You know, oh, I guess I kind of got off subject, but my point is that what happened back then isn't happening now. And us old wineskins, we're going to have to get used to it. We don't need to like 5 Seconds of Summer, but you know what? We need to respect what they do, because they might not have toured for 4 years straight in a van with a trailer, or nowadays no trailer because that saves gas. You need to respect them, because these are kids that are on the road with not necessarily the band that they want to be out on the road with. You know, but hell, it is an experience for them. It is experience for them. Them making money that you never made, it's experience for them. What they do with that fame, that money, all that fortune, that's what's going to decide their future. That's what's going to decide their longevity. That's from my personal perspective. But you know what? I'm going to respect the fact that this band is carrying the roots of rock and roll, whether you like it or I like it. They're not a Disney band. They're not like the Jonas Brothers. They're not like Austin or R5 or whatever, or, you know, Miley Cyrus or whoever came from that Disney culture. They came from, you know, Australia, touring weekends, having to fly to their destinations because God knows driving was out of the question, because every place was too far apart for them to drive to. And they, you know, they spent 6 hours a day, 6 days a week practicing and writing songs. But I don't want to take away from Evan and his article in AP Magazine, because it's very well written, and it shows both perspectives of the, I guess you could say, debate. My only thing is, because of this, you know, this crazy fame that happens so early in their lives and careers, you know, does it have the potential of getting to their heads? And from what I read in the AP Magazine and from talking to Evan, I don't think that's going to be the case. These kids seem like they're true to their roots. And, you know, only time will tell. Thank you to everyone that downloads the Kill Rock Podcast, for sharing the Kill Rock Podcast, and for listening to the Kill Rock Podcast. We thank you for your support, and, you know, give us feedback. What do you like? What don't you like? Do you just like the interviews? Do you just like our viewpoints? What do you like? Let us know. We had, you know, Hearts Like Lions week one. We had Talking Trees week two. We had Evan Baker from American Arson last week. We have an AP writer, Evan Lucy, this week. Next week, I'd like to let you know that we have Volumes on the show. And then the next couple weeks, we have Dayseeker, as well as the band Silent Planet, coming up. So stay tuned. We have other guests booked, and I would love to let you know who they are. However, that's kind of difficult because, you know, once the interviews are recorded, then I like to announce, because if they're not recorded and I announce it and it doesn't work out, then we're kind of screwed. So once we have all these other ones recorded, you're going to know, and I'm going to tell you. So stay tuned. I promise you won't regret it. Before we get to Evan Lucy, the writer of the 5 Seconds of Summer cover story for AP Magazine, I'd like to introduce you to a band called Widower. And off their EP, World of Hate, this song is called Sleep. The voice of the Voice in Verse podcast, and also the writer of the 5 Seconds of Summer story, our cover story for AP Magazine. How's it going, Evan?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I listened to the interview you did with Matt Carter today, and that was really interesting.
Awesome. Yeah, Matt's a really cool guy, and they have so much cool stuff going on there with their Bad Christian podcast and right. and label that it was cool to be able to talk to him about some of that.
Yeah, I've listened to a few. I listened to the one with Stephen Christian, Chris Dudley, and also Ryan Downey, who did the interview with Tim Lamnesis. And
yeah,
everything that has been said through that podcast, at least from what I listened to, has been really good, as well as yours.
Oh, well, thank you for listening, Keith. I appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome. How did you get started in the music industry?
Well, let's see. I've always loved music. I think that's the common thing that everybody has. And I went to college. I went to the University of Missouri and majored in journalism. And while I was there, I had the opportunity to, you know, write for the school newspaper and stuff, and got to interview some cool bands like Tegan and Sarah and Hot Heat and Andrew McMahon from Jack's Mannequin, who had just, I think he was just like coming back from the cancer thing at the time.
Oh, wow.
So I talked to him, I talked to Limbeck and a couple other bands. And then just from there, I just kept going. I got really involved with my local scene. I'm from North Carolina originally, so I got really involved with my local scene and started making friends there, and just kept doing stuff for the school newspaper. And then as the years went along, just decided, hey, you know, I'm going to try to do bigger stuff here, because that's ultimately what my goal was at the time, was to be a full-time music journalist. Mm-hmm. And I interned at Billboard and began writing for AP, and now I write for Rhapsody and a couple other places as well. So it's been probably almost 10 years since I started, and it's been really cool. It's been, you know, to have the opportunity to meet people like Tom DeLonge or Stephen Jenkins from Third Eye Blind, or be in the same room as John Bon Jovi and ask questions. It's been really kind of surreal at times.
That's amazing. What made you decide to start the Voice and Verse podcast?
Well, I'm kind of, I'm also a musician too. I forgot to mention that, but I'm kind of a hobbyist musician. I was in bands in high school and a little bit in college as well. And I've always been fascinated with the concept of art in general. It's like all of this started with nothing. You know, there was no song until there was a song. But for there to be a song, there had to be one idea, a spark of an idea that led to something else, that led to something else. You know, most people hear a great song and they go, I don't even know how you would ever begin to write a song like that. You know, there's that the great Paul McCartney, you know, Yesterday thing where he dreamed the melody. So just like learning how the songs that I love got started on a technical level has been something that's always been so fascinating to me. And there was never any kind of outlet like that was devoted to that. So I said, I'm just going to start it myself. And called up some friends at the beginning, Joel from Good Charlotte, and you know, somebody like Brendan from Panic at the Disco, and just said, hey, like, come be on this thing. I need some people up front to get the word out. And it's been really good so far. We're 16 episodes in, and we've got some really great guests coming up. We just launched one with Matt Carter from Emory, like you said. The next one, I'll go ahead and leak it, will be Ace Enders from the early November.
Wow.
And I Can Make a Mess. He was super, super awesome. Just a great guy. And he's been involved with so many different projects over the past, you know, 10 years. So it was cool to break down some of those with him, and got some other things up my sleeve that I'm not ready to reveal yet because we're still locking them in, but some really great songwriters, producers, and you know, band dudes in the future.
And you're released on Wednesdays, right?
We do release on Wednesdays, other Wednesday.
We release Monday, so.
That was one of the things that I had to like figure out when to release. Yeah. Looking at, you know, the rest of the podcasts out there and trying to figure out when stuff comes out. Tuesdays are usually album, you know, Tuesdays are our album release days. Yeah. So there's a lot of good tie-ins with Wednesdays. You know, record comes out on Tuesday, we can do a podcast,
right,
you know, about it on Wednesday. So we've got some of those coming up. Some of the upcoming records of the remaining summer and fall will have a dedicated podcast the next day.
How do you schedule your interviews? Do you usually like kind of bunch them up and then figure out a time to release them, or do you just kind of go slow?
It depends. When I started, I was like, I wanted to be super prepared. Mm. So I had probably 4 or 5 episodes in the can ready to go.
Okay.
And then as I did that, I found that it wasn't as fun, because part of the fun is, you know, every week or every other week, like talking to people. So yeah, there was a long period where I wasn't doing that. And that was kind of boring and not fun. So I've gotten on a pretty good schedule. So as soon as one wraps, I'm ready to go, to do the next interview, and then, you know, so on and so forth. So it's a good schedule, and it's taken this long to kind of get in a rhythm, but I think things are really in the flow now.
Well, 16 episodes in every other week, that's not too bad.
No, I you know, the goal is to go every week, but I've got a full-time job and a lot of kind of other things that I like to do on the side, but you know, every other week I think is good. We're trying to make them longer now as well. We started out, you know, a little shorter, but going to go up in length. The Chris Carrabba one was, you know, was almost 90 minutes,
yeah,
which was nuts, but that guy, you know, he's one of the greatest guys to talk to. He just talks forever and ever and ever, and I was happy to listen to him talk for almost 90 minutes. He's got so many amazing stories.
Well, when we were talking before we started recording, you're telling me you listened to the American Arson podcast, and it's the exact same thing. He, I mean, I've known him for a while, Evan Baker, but, you know, he had a lot to say, and I'm glad he got it out.
Absolutely. And that's the problem with, you know, he told me we set up the first one at a show. They were opening, his new band Twin Forks was opening for Augustana. And
really?
We had I think we had 45 minutes scheduled, and I thought that was going to be enough, but we barely got to the beginning of Dashboard in that 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And it was time for him to go on stage, and he said, you know, can we do a part two? I said, absolutely, let's do it. So, you know, you get those guys sometimes who just lock in and who have such great stories, and they really have a lot to say. And you don't want to put that fire out, because then the opposite happens and you get people who kind of give you short answers, and it's right. Tough. It's like getting blood out of a stone.
Especially you notice that songwriters love to talk about writing songs as well.
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing. I think I don't remember who said it to me, but one of my guests said, this is awesome because it's all like the nerdy stuff that nobody ever asks
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, you know, when I write about bands for AP or whatever, that's not something that people care about necessarily. Like, they don't care about, I sat down and we had, you know, half of a verse and then we took this other thing and made it into something else. They want to know what the songs are about and kind of the, right. you know, the general process of making a record emotionally or what was going on in the timeline. But I care about the nerdy stuff. So we just get into the nitty gritty, and the bands really do appreciate that as well. It gives them an outlet to talk about that.
Right. And when you were talking to Aaron Gillespie, I don't know how to pronounce it, but when you're
Gillespie, I think it is. Yeah.
one of my favorite bands, can't even pronounce his last name. I think you got more out of him about They're Only Chasing Safety than I think anyone's ever gotten out of the band ever. So.
Yeah, that was one that was really, really exciting for me, because that was a record that was so important to me.
Same.
I think I said it on the show page that the very first song I ever put on my iPod, the very first iPod I ever got, was Reinventing Your Exit.
Yeah.
So I've got such fond memories attached to that record. And it's a record that, because they kind of moved away from it so fast in terms of Define the Great Line and everything that came after it, they've stopped playing a lot of those songs. And then they, you know, Aaron left the band. And I don't think that there had been like a definitive kind of document about the making of that record. So that was something that I was super excited to do. And he couldn't have been nicer. He took, you know, a great amount of time out of his schedule. He's on the road with Paramore now. So they've got, that's like a whole nother level of, you know, of stuff going on in your schedule. But super great guy, and I was stoked to learn more about that record. That's why I really like those 10-year kind of retrospectives. I did one with Gabe Saporta from Midtown, talking about that record, which was, I think, you know, the second Midtown interview he had done since the reunion. So I was happy to do that one, and then we've got some more cool 10-year stuff coming up. I think those are the ones that people really like the most. So we're gonna keep doing those.
Well, next year VSU turns 10 years old.
Oh, next year is just insane in terms of what turns 10.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the Acceptance record, which turns 10.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, of course, as I say that, I'm blanking on all of them. personally for me, the Receiving Into Sirens, their first record was really big.
Yes.
So I'm going to call up those guys and see if we could do a big show on that, just because that one is like one of the most intricate records I've heard. And it blew my mind back in 2005. And I still listen to it and go like, how do you put those things together? And then you bring the parts back in from four songs earlier and make it all fit and not have it sound, you know, like a giant mess. So that record turns 10 next year. Chroma from Cartel turns 10 next year.
Really?
Will. Yeah.
Wow.
I had Will on my show earlier, and we talked a lot about Chroma, but we didn't do a dedicated one. I don't think we probably will, just because we talked enough about it. What else came out in 2005? Visu, like you said, came out in 2005.
And that's one of my favorite. I'm a big – Thrice has been my favorite band since 2002. So it's The Artist in the Ambulance and Visu, I would say, are probably my top favorite albums. So when The Artist in the Ambulance turned 10 – I was kind of sad because they weren't going to do a reunion tour or anything like that.
Yeah, I keep hoping that they're going to come back soon, but I think they will. Eddie is now in Angels and Airwaves, which is a great gig for him, because you know, even when you're not active, he's still getting some money on the side. But you know, Dustin's got his church thing, and
Ryland's got Puig Destroyer.
Yeah, Puig Destroyer. You, the Angels fan, is talking about Puig Destroyer. But
you know,
no.
My biggest, I mean, I interviewed Dustin a while ago because I used to work for Internet Webzine, but I've always wanted to run into Riley. So I try, when we go to Angels games, I try to look up on Instagram.
See where he's sitting and just kind of find him.
Yeah, just kind of lurk around the whole stadium.
Oh, it's so funny to run into you here.
Oh my God.
What are the odds? No, I'd love to get Dustin on the talk to talk Visu, because that's a great record. And I think, again, a record that kind of a lot of people weren't expecting them to make. So I think they've probably got some cool stories behind that one.
Oh yeah, and talking songwriting, I don't think music back then was as intricate yet mainstream sounding as Thrice was. I mean, you could listen to the artist in the ambulance and 8 out of the 12 songs had time signature changes, and I don't think anyone could even notice that, at least from an average ear. And then Visu is about the same.
And then to have both of those come out on a major label too, mm-hmm. you know, that was really cool when them and Thursday got signed at the same time. It was kind of weird because they were like a package deal. I feel like the modern like scene equivalent of them a couple years ago was like Set Your Goals and 4 Years Strong. Mm-hmm. It just kind of felt like bands that were just kind of trailing each other,
yeah.
or they were just like holding hands throughout their career. Not there's anything wrong with that, but I felt like you signed both of those bands and you put them on tour together, and Coheed opened, which was just an insane tour back in like 2003. Yeah. But it's hard to like separate the two bands and let them succeed on their own merit when you're so intertwined like that. But
yeah,
to have those records come out on a major was just kind of nuts. And then I think that, you know,
I think Sum 41 and Sum 41 and Fall Out Boy were around that time as well.
Yeah, I mean, Fall Out Boy was definitely around that time. I think Sum 41 broke a little bit earlier in like 2000.
No, but didn't Does This Look Infected come around 2004, 2005?
I can look it up. I think, does this...
Because I believe they were all island bands. Thrice, I believe Fall Out Boy was too.
Does This Look Infected actually came out in 2002, which
Holy
is crazy.
Crap.
That's, yeah, that's crazy. That's a lot longer ago than I expected.
Yeah. And I mean, now it makes you just kind of feel older when you see that
favorite
albums are 10 years old.
Or 15 in the case of Enema of the State, which is the one that kind of like got me into this music to begin with.
A Blink-182 fan.
Absolutely.
So then we talked about songwriting. One thing I found was, I don't necessarily think it's controversial. It did cause controversy while me and my girlfriend were driving down to San Diego, as we both read your article on 5 Seconds of Summer.
Hopefully not while driving. Hopefully somebody
was... I read it prior. She read it on the drive. And then it was like a 45-minute discussion.
Oh, wow.
Before we get started into the article, I want to know what you think of the band.
What I think, that's a loaded question right there. Yeah. No, you know, I unapologetically like a lot of that record. Mm. I think for what it is, it's not trying to be high art. It's not trying to be, you know, anything but pop music, you know? And I think She Looks So Perfect is an undeniable hit. Funny story, I'll go back real quick. Mm. I was in LA last August. It must have been, almost a year to right now. And I was doing the AP cover story on Panic at the Disco. And I was out to dinner with Brendan and his wife and Lolo, who sings the hook on Miss Jackson, mm-hmm. the part at the beginning. And then this guy, Jake Sinclair, who worked for a lot of years, I think he probably still does, as Butch Walker's engineer. He's also in Butch Walker's live band, and he does you know, everything with Butcher. He's worked on Pink, and he did the Fall Out Boy record, and he worked on the Panic record. And we were sitting at dinner, and he says, I just worked with this band today. They're from Australia. They're called 5 Seconds of Summer, and they want to sound like Blink-182.
Wow.
So Martin from Boys Like Girls has been writing him all these like kind of sad ballads, but we went in a different direction, and we wrote the song called American Apparel Underwear. And he like... He like told us the lyrics to the chorus. She looks so perfect standing there in my American Apparel underwear. Yeah. And the whole table just like burst out laughing because it's one of those things, like, it's so stupid, but you know that it's going to be a hit just like immediately.
Yeah.
And then I was at the studio the next day talking to him, and he played me the demo of it. And the demo is actually, if I remember correctly, way more Blink sounding than what ended up on the record.
Oh, wow.
So it did change a little bit. But the second the chorus comes in, you just like can't help but just go, yeah, I mean, that's it. Like, that's it. That's the hit right there. So that was like my very brief first impression of them. And I was cool with that. And the fact that they were writing with Alex from All Time Low and John Feldman and the Madden Brothers and Ryan from Yellow Card, they wrote with him. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know that. It was it made it into my review of the album. I don't think it made it into the story.
Well, I was looking at their ASCAP credits, and the only name I found was Alex.
Yeah, he's the only one. Well, no, that song Amnesia was written by the Madden Brothers and a couple other people. That was the only song they didn't write on the album.
Okay.
And I think from my conversations with Joel about it, it was like they had that song kicking around for a long time, he and Benji, and they just couldn't find anybody to sing it.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't think they thought it was right to be a good Charlotte song. Mm. So they finally thought that 5 Seconds of Summer was like the right band to sing it, and it's going to be a huge, probably even bigger than She Looks So Perfect.
Mm.
But back to the question, like, yeah. I think there are some really great songs on that album, and there are some songs that aren't as good. Mm-hmm. But overall, like, I have no shame in saying that I like 5 Seconds of Summer. I'm going to see them on Monday with One Direction. I did not buy tickets to that. No. I would feel a little weird doing that, but I will go and I'll have a great time because I think that the songs are you know, super catchy. And to me, like, I talked about this in my podcast a couple episodes ago with a friend of mine, Zach, from Who Runs Property of Zach. We talked about co-writing and stuff like that, but I don't care. Like, a great song is a great song no matter who writes it. So
right.
I don't have a lot of strong opinions on co-writing. It's just kind of like, you know, whatever. If the song's great, I'm going to like it. If not, then I'll take issue with the song kind of sucking and not who's behind it. Now, obviously, other people have a lot of other different opinions on that. But so I love them. I think they're a great band. And I think that as they get past the first record and kind of figure out what they are, I think they'll get even better.
Do you believe they should be scrutinized as much as they are?
No, I don't. I think, again, this might just be because I'm old, older. How old are you, by the way?
26.
Okay, I'm 27.
Oh.
So we're about the same age.
Yeah.
And I don't know your thoughts on 5 Seconds of Summer.
Well, I'll get to that later.
So we'll get to that. Okay. You know, I think the first thing that people see is the One Direction thing.
Right.
And I think if you take the time to do like any sort of research or read the story, shameless plug, you'll see that they started there. They weren't like a manufactured thing that the label put together.
Right.
They started as one kid in a bedroom covering, you know, Mayday Parade and Go Radio and A Day to Remember.
Right.
And then they grew kind of organically from that. So I think that kind of criticism that they are a manufactured put together thing, and, you know, the labels ripping holes in their t-shirts and stuff, is kind of unfair just because that's not what they are. So that's like categorically false in my opinion. Now the whole like, are they, aren't they pop punk thing? I think there's a little bit more room for debate.
Right.
But again, it reminds me of the whole thing that we all went through in 2002 when Good Charlotte and Simple Plan were big. You know, it's like the same, it's just, you know, 12 years later, like Good Charlotte was ridiculed because they weren't punk enough, even though they loved Rancid and they loved Social Distortion, but their fans were, you know, teenage girls buying posters and Hot Topic.
Right.
So how can that be punk? It's not really, but you know, I don't know. I think about this like almost every day just because I think they're one of the more curious cases. I don't think we've seen a band like this in a while that gets so much hate for being perceived differently by different sets of people.
And it's not because they're Australian. It's just because they're 18-year-old kids and they're touring with One Direction.
Right. And all, and again, if you read the story, like you'll see that they didn't want to tour with One Direction.
Right.
Like two, like one of them, Luke, the who I guess is like the de facto front man. They all sing, but he's like the guy who's, and you know, who stands center stage. He's like the heartthrob, I guess.
Right.
He was like, nope, not doing it. And then, you know, Michael, the guitar player, wanted to play Warped Tour because he loves All Time Low and he loves, you know, weird bands that like, he loves Ann Arbor and he loves Sleeping with Sirens and stuff like that. But then Ashton, the drummer, kind of, you know, you look at the bigger picture and you go, you know, if we do this, you know, because they, I mean, they were big in Australia comparatively, as big as a band can be in Australia. There's a cap to that, you know, obviously, because a lot of bands, you know, it's Australia is just such a different animal. I think there's so many, you never hear about bands from Australia. I mean, Tonight Alive is like one of the only ones that's made it out, but like on a wide scale, like there aren't that many bands that can do it. And I completely forgot where this was going.
Sorry.
Oh, so to have the possibility of getting out of Australia, I think is like the biggest obstacle that a band needs to overcome. And to have that opportunity to play arenas, you know, even if you're opening for a band that you don't think you identify with, is huge. And I think a lot of bands say they wouldn't do it, but I think they're liars.
We'll get back to Evan in just one moment, but first, this song is We Are Taking Over by the band 2464.
Thoughts were driven, harsh devised displays of skillfully syncopated strategy. We will not go under. You promised we'd go. Gently, we are taking over. Seeping through your conscience, nonchalant, it's smiling. Unexpected, honest hands. The plans we thought we'd make, what a shame. A billion thank yous can't and will never repay. These brisk nights, what we do best is play. Listen up, for you we play. No regrets, for you we play. Mama paid her dues and lately so heavily.
I believe that too.
Granted, like, you know, we're not talking about the Wonder Years or the Story So Far or Fireworks or any bands like that. Like, it would be, you know, anything like the Somerset All Time Low,
right?
Even back to like We the Kings, like any band that says they wouldn't do that, they're lying. Because
Alex even said that he was willing to open for them.
Yeah, that's such a curious thing to me too. Like, it's really awkward, I think, when you're in the position that 5 Seconds of Summer is in now, when you are bigger than the bands that influenced you. But again, like, it's so cyclical. Like, I remember Blink being so big in 1999 that they had Bad Religion open for them. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like the same thing. It's like, do you feel bad for being so successful that you're asking your idols to open for you? I don't think you should, but it ultimately, like, everybody has an ego, right? So, you know, it's like Yellow Card opening for All Time Low, when Yellow Card was one of the reasons that All Time Low is a band. Mm-hmm. Or the starting line opening for All Time Low. It's a very precarious place in your career, but I think Alex most of all gets it. He's one of the people who really gets it. And I think if they were to take a tour with 5 Seconds of Summer, I have no idea what's going to happen. I think All Time Low would be better for it. I think they have a lot to gain from that.
And I think especially because they're hitting their prime. So why not piggyback off that band that's going to do arenas?
They're doing amphitheaters. Like, it's insane. Like, really? those shows, I was thinking about, like, before the record came out, like, where are they going to play next summer when they do their American tour? Cause they can do, you know, like, they can do arenas in Australia and stuff, and they could probably do arenas over in the UK, no problem, and they are, but America is such a different beast, especially since they did like a really big underplay tour in the spring where they played like 2,000 capacity clubs and they sold them out instantaneously. So it's like, where do you go from that? Do you try to do arenas, or do you try to do like multiple nights at, like, you know, Radio City, which is like 6,000, I think. So you do maybe 3 nights at Radio City or something like that. But they're going for the amphitheaters, and I think they're going to sell, you know, I don't know if they'll sell them all out, but they'll sell a lot of tickets in those places.
Do you think there's longevity in the band?
I think that's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows that the career, it's hard to be a career band. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be a career artist, you know, general. Katy Perry, no problem. She's going to be making music for the next, you know, 20 years, and she's still going to be raking in the money every year. But you think about, everybody thought that Gautier. Like, everybody thought Gautier, he had a number one hit, and nobody has heard from, like, he should be on, you know, milk cartons at this point. Cause that guy will never have anything else that ever comes close. But I think having the team that they have behind them, you know, they have the same management as One Direction. And I think that team knows how to build longevity, because One Direction has been, they've had 3 records and they seem to get bigger on every one. Like, they're doing stadiums now. When they were doing arenas in the past, they were doing arenas last summer. Now they're doing stadiums. So I think with that kind of team behind them, and a label that will put a lot of money into them, I think they can definitely continue. But you really don't know. Like, nothing's ever guaranteed. There have been, you know, plenty of cases where you think a band's gonna keep on going, and then suddenly one day you just wake up and nobody cares anymore. Like, the Jonas Brothers, I think, is probably what a lot of people compare 5 Seconds of Summer to. Like, they're like the pop punk Jonas Brothers or whatever. Like, the scene Jonas Brothers. But I think the fact that they have entrenched themselves in this kind of little, you know, underground genre, pop punk, emo, whatever you want to call it, like, affords them the opportunity to do both. Now, granted, a lot of people won't accept them in that scene because of what they are and the image that they project, and, you know, they're on a major label and touring with One Direction or whatever, but the subset that does, like, maybe me or people like me, I think if there is a mainstream fall off, they'll have a fallback.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got excited when you said they are compared to the Jonas Brothers, because that's exactly what I said during our little debate, me and my girlfriends. But my opinion, I agree with you. A lot of the songs are a lot better than I thought they would be, especially after listening to She's So Perfect. I listened to the whole album. I'm like, wow, there's actually a lot of heart in this, and it's not just silly, you know, pop punk or whatever, pop rock.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the but.
Well, no, there's no real but. I think I agree. Experience can shorten the longevity, but I do agree with you. The team that they have, whether it's writing or just the management, I think that could push them a lot further. And I think we're in a day and age where writers, they take pride in their writing, but they're willing to get criticism as well as, you know, someone that could come in and help them to make that song that much better. And I think that's what they have good going for them.
In talking with John Feldman, he was like, you know, super adamant to me that these guys are not just like marionettes. They really do take an interest in their band, and they really want to learn how to write good songs, and they're involved in the process. They're not just, I think what he said to me is they're not just like in the back of the room tweeting when, right. you know, when he's working on stuff. Like, they're all actively involved. And I think that's really important, that they don't want to just be, you know, a figurehead of something. They actually want to do be a real band, because that's all they've known. You know, you get swept up in so much other stuff, like the One Direction thing, and you're on Tiger Beat, and and you're going to radio stations. People are asking you about your dream girlfriend. Like, they're just like, they just want to play music like the bands that inspired them. And I don't know. It's gets so clouded sometimes. And that's why I think there's so much debate, is because they are like a pretty confusing band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Blink-182 was as well. Maybe not in the beginning, but around Enema of the State and Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, they're reaching out to a new audience with those.
I think that's a really good point. I think I've had this discussion with a couple people before, but after Enema of the State came out, and I think specifically like the All the Small Things video,
mm-hmm.
where they were running down the beach naked, and they had the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
They were in like the private plane, and they had the girls like holding up the signs that said like Travis, I'm pregnant or whatever. You go to the shows, and that's all it is. It's teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
So they were making fun of it, but the audience eventually turned out to be that. I don't know if that's a self-fulfilling prophecy or that's foreshadowing, whatever you want to call it. But I think something drastically happened around the time of Enema of the State, and you had posters of them in their underwear, you know, and they had three different covers of Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. Each one was like colored with a different guy's, you know, face, or the sticker had like a different guy's face on it for the different bonus tracks. So the marketing shifted, and a lot of people think that Blink was, you know, marketed as a boy band around that time. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I think, again, it's one of those things you can see it from a lot of different viewpoints, depending on where your point of entry is. As somebody who got into Blink, not because they were hot or they were running around naked or whatever, you know, somebody like that sees it differently than somebody who sees them on the cover of, you know, I don't even know what kind of teen magazines are out there. J14 or something like that.
Like
Tom DeLonge's Dream Girl, or why is Travis the shy one? You know, like, they all had personalities back then too. Travis was the shy one.
Right.
Very much like a boy band has the crazy one with the dreadlocks who has a drug problem, you know, like, so it's, I don't know. It can change like overnight. It's so crazy.
You're going to get marketed to those teenage girls when you're signed to the machine.
Yeah. I think they know what they've signed up for.
Yeah.
And I think they're okay with that. But at the same time, there's the internal debate that I think really fuels them, especially Ashton, the drummer. Like, he really is like, wants to prove people wrong. And he loves, you know, he loves the debate about whether they are or they aren't pop punk or whatever, because it's, you know, if they do end up proving a lot of people wrong and winning them over, you know, they'll be the last ones laughing.
Yeah, and you had John Feldman. He produced the album?
He produced most of the record. I think like 8 of the 12 songs, yeah.
Well, one thing he said that kind of struck me, because I have my own opinion about, you know, the genre of rock regarding mainstream. He said that if you want to continue hearing guitars on the radio, then you're going to need to support bands like 5 Seconds of Summer. And my point, I said this, you know, maybe half a year ago. I was talking to a kid in one of my classes. I said, you know, rock and roll died since the Foo Fighters broke up. And I'm not talking rock and roll, the genre. I'm talking about in a mainstream perspective. And now that you have this band, 5 Seconds of Summer, you know, it could go both ways. Either they're going to go super pop or they're going to stay the way that they are. And just from reading your article, I believe that they're going to keep guitars and they're going to keep drums and they're going to keep that rock edge to it.
I think so. I think something that didn't make it in the article, I really wish it had. They were telling me a story about they were in London doing a lot of writing after they moved over from Australia. And they came into a session once, and the producer said, "All right, so I hear you guys sound like Hanson." And it was just like, "No, what? No, I mean, no, we don't sound like Hanson." I think that they, you know, you always see if you follow any of them online or see people retweet them, they tweet like something corporate lyric. So they talk like the Callum, the bassist, just tweeted out like, "We really love Go Radio. You should go listen to Go Radio," which is crazy. Like you're not going to see another artist that's number one on the charts, except for like Fall Out Boy or Paramore, right, bands that came from this scene saying, "Go check out Go Radio or something corporate," yeah, or Ann Arbor or Of Mice and Men. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I think that they have that, the roots there. And I think that even though the machine might push them in one direction, I think they're going to one direction. Look at that.
That's good.
I totally off the cuff. They're going to push back. And I think that John Feldman is kind of the perfect guy for that. Mm. Because he knows how to, you know, he's a guy, he's just a lifer, you know, and he's seen all of the trends come and go. He was huge in that Used Story of the Year thing, the, you know, the pop, you know, the kind of screamo thing in the, I guess like around 2002, 2003. And I think he can help them navigate all of the bullshit that comes along with it and help them make a record that they want to make.
Right. Where can we find you on the interwebs?
You can find me personally at Evan Lucy on Twitter. You can find everything about the podcast at voiceandversepodcast.com and at voiceversepod. And I think that's about it. If you Google my name or the show's name, you'll probably find something.
And like I said in the beginning, everyone go listen to the Voice and Verse podcast. Such a great introspective podcast about songwriting and those bands and writers that wrote those songs. Evan, it was great talking to you and nerding out with you for the last hour.
That was my pleasure. Thanks for taking an interest. Everything in the future of the show is going to be bigger and better. I'm so stoked on the guests that we've confirmed so far for the upcoming weeks and months.
And that was Evan Lucy from the Voice and Verse podcast. And we would like to thank him so much for joining us here at the Kill Rock podcast. Such, you know, just a lot of great things to say about 5 Seconds of Summer, as well as his own podcast. And I suggest that everyone that listens to this podcast go over and listen to the Voice and Verse podcast. They release every other week, bi-weekly, if you would say, on Wednesdays. The next one he did announce is Ace Enders from the early November, which I am totally stoked to be able to listen to that one, because if there's a songwriter I would love to talk to, it would be Ace Enders. And, you know, that's going to be an interesting conversation. And he let me know who he has planned and who he has booked. And I'm going to tell you, you're going to want to stick around and check out the Voice and Verse podcast. Listen from episode 1 all the way up to 16. And you know what? Thank you guys so much for subscribing over here. We just had the biggest boom so far in this podcast last week, like I said earlier, we got up to number 15 on the rock charts and we broke the thousands in the overall charts. So we want to thank you guys for downloading, for subscribing. Send us some feedback. Tell us what you think about this podcast and tell us what you want from this podcast. I know I go on a lot of rants sometimes about my own personal views, but you know what? I want to hear from you and I want to know what you think and like. And just so we could fulfill your desires for what this podcast should be. Next week here on the Kill Rock Podcast, we have Diego from Volumes. Their album No Sleep came out just last month. Go check it out. And this last song is by Volumes. It's called The Mixture.
Shoot down.